shall be dealing with macro freedoms. Macro freedoms are directly relevant to the achievement and maintenance of free societies. We appreciate your attendance because it demonstrates your willingness to work for the future well-being and prosperity of this society and the world at large. Macro freedoms are the large structures and issues that have a direct bearing on freedom potentials. We are vitally aware, however, that the whole is never independent of the parts, and that the larger view of society must acknowledge the importance of individuals like you if it is to remain meaningful and healthy. Whilst this is not a personal development school in the narrow sense, we believe free persons need to prepare themselves to preserve and expand their freedom and the freedom of others. The level of your self-development is extremely important to all forms of social development, including the development of freedom potentials. The level an individual achieves depends partly on inherent talents and personality, and more importantly on the cultural stimuli, background and associations we are exposed to. Self-development is the largest task an individual undertakes. By self-development we mean development of oneself, not development by oneself or development of the self. Growth is an endless process, not a destination. It is important to understand that an individual's growth is a lengthy organic process. Certainly there are instances where an individual gains sudden insights or makes sharp changes in direction. These are very important experiences. However, the norm is that one tends to grow towards these changes, preparing for them gradually. The realization of new things or new directions comes from gradual and balanced growth. There is no simple universal formula for self-development. People are too diverse for that. Each person's strengths, talents, and contributions will be unique, and there is only one way such development can be approached. Each person must become an authority on what works for them personally. The individual has extraordinary potential. This means that you have extraordinary potential. Each individual is charged with so much potential that it really can only be described as stupendous. This potential lies within us almost wholly unrecognized and therefore unrealized. We would be quite justified in doubting its existence if it were not for the rare individuals who break through the barriers of disbelief and self-doubt. Such people rise up and defy the odds to achieve great things. They teach us the value of recognizing and correctly using our personal resources. Perhaps the most remarkable example in the 20th century is Alexander Solzhenitsyn. Imprisoned as a young man for a few inadvertent words written in a letter, he was made a slave in the toughest labor camps in the world. In his society, nobody dared to assist him, lest they too should be imprisoned. Solzhenitsyn was just one of 6 to 8 million such slaves. Yet 30 years of suppression did not destroy him. Indeed, it was he more than anyone who destroyed the Gulag Archipelago. He did it by digging into his own resources. No threat or pain was allowed to warp his mind, his integrity, his judgment, or his spiritual growth. And thus he survived. He developed capacities in adversity he would otherwise not have dreamed existed. In all these years, he never once failed to pick the informer in his cell immediately. With no intellectual demands upon him, his ability was his own to direct. He learned the importance of understanding and communicating with himself. He began to write, though not in front of informers. When he made friends, he began to circulate his writings privately. In the end, the authorities dared not eliminate him, but they could not leave him at large in the community. They eventually decided to exile him to the West, where they thought society would be so uncaring that he would have little influence. Such people have lessons for all of us. No matter what power or pressure is exercised against us, if we refuse to sanction it, to believe it, or to be warped by it, it is powerless. All people are easy to kill, but some are impossible to defeat or to embitter, so that their spirit is destroyed. In these matters, you have to do it yourself. You have to be strong. No one else can be strong for you. This must be understood and appreciated from the outset. Growth, personal growth, is ultimately up to yourself. Dr. Nicholas Murray Butler is credited with the observation that there are three types of people in the world: those who make things happen, those who watch what happens, and those who wonder what happened. We laugh at this observation, and the reason we laugh is that there are not three types at all. There is only one type, and that's me. And I'm all three of them. The realization of freedom potential is only possible in action. Or put another way, a tree is known by its fruit. The limitations within us are overcome through actively releasing our true potential. If you really know something to be true, you apply it. You act upon it. If you are not applying it, you have more work to do. However, the person who is simply wondering about life is involved in an event in which he doesn't know where to start, but yet an event from which he cannot escape. Freedom potentials have to be carried forward, developed so that they bear fruit in their application. Let us consider the three C's of self-development. These are confidence, courage, and culture. Confidence, or rather the lack of it, is one of the greatest inhibitors to personal success. Confidence is very closely associated with one's own self-esteem. If you think little of yourself, you cannot fulfill your potential. Fear of failure also limits your ambition and the realization of your potential. To overcome fear, it may be necessary to take a very practical approach. Because you are an individual, you might well apply the law which says, "That which works for me is successful." For example, a young man had an extraordinary fear of public speaking. He regarded this as a failing and a nuisance because he had planned to be a man of some standing in the community. His first attempt at public speaking resulted in his mind going blank with fear to the point that he could not continue his speech. He was so overcome with fear that he fainted and was led back to his chair. Such an experience would stop many from ever trying again. This young fellow, however, resolved to overcome this problem by the most practical approach, an approach that he thought would work for him. He reasoned that if he attempted public speaking often enough, he would simply not be able to continue to command such a level of trauma on repeated occasions. He also decided to prepare better, in a more organized fashion. Slowly, he found that he could not reach such a level of trauma on every occasion. He couldn't get worse in this area, only better. And this he did. By early adulthood, he was a member of the state's champion debating team. The practical law developed into this for him: if there is something that is worth doing, and it is difficult to do, do it often. This story also illustrates the fact that worthwhile projects involve effort, patience, and often pain. Nothing in the world will take the place of patience. Talent won't. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. Genius won't. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education won't. The world is full of educated derelicts. Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent. The slogan "Press On" has solved the problems of the human race. Our second C is courage. Courage has won many advantages in history. After all, acquiescence is the only reason we are finally defeated. We do agree, of course, that the acceptance of defeat is a courageous act in some circumstances. If it is totally impossible to proceed, an orderly retreat can allow you to fight again. It is never wise to waste your resources in a truly futile cause. It takes courage to decide. No one could ever doubt the physical courage of the Japanese soldiers in the Second World War. However, one would question the wisdom of the suppression of their moral courage, which demanded that they should concede defeat. This courage was neglected for fear of the admission of defeat. There are many forms of failing moral courage. One is exaggerated physical courage. Another is a propensity to fool or lie to oneself so as to maintain that failing courage. But the most common form of failing courage is signified in the inability to say, I'm sorry, or I was wrong, or I made a mistake. It is important to be courageously honest with yourself. Don't lie to yourself to maintain an appearance of confidence and courage. Be courageous in regard to your own ego. Besides, people see through self-defeat in others. The third important characteristic for personal development is culture. Personal development is only possible when a person is well-fed. By this I do not mean nutritious food, but well-fed on spiritual food. In this course, the word spiritual is used in its original classical sense. The classical Greeks and Romans spoke of the breath of things. To them, the difference between a living and a dead person was that one had breath and the other did not. The Latin word spiritus means breathing. The English language has retained this meaning in the word respiration. The classical Greek and Roman writers also used the word for breath to indicate the non-material substance of life. Just as the air we inhale and exhale is the invisible breath of life. Like breath, it is not inert, it is dynamic, it moves. We have all at some time been inspired by an atmosphere, even if it was only a local football match. The spirit of a word or a deed is intangible, yet it is an essential medium through which that which is within a man relates to all that is without. Just as we breathe in and out, so in a similar way we take in and give out the spirit of deeds, thoughts and words. Man can be no more unspiritual in this sense than he can stop breathing. Our option is not whether to be spiritual or not, but what spirit we will live by and therefore communicate in the course of our relationships. Spiritual, therefore, indicates the central mood and philosophy of a group. It may also indicate a religious commitment as well. Thus, people identify with a group which meets the spirit of their own needs and sensitivities. From this feature of human existence, we develop cultures and subcultures. The spiritual heritage of a culture is sometimes ignored by revolutionary activists, so that those identifying with the culture feel disenfranchised. Such an experience is spiritually demoralising and destructive. The English tradition has supplied us with an enormous reserve of brilliant poets, playwrights, essayists, philosophers and composers who have devoted their lives to the articulation of spiritual food for Western man. It is important that you drink of that well. It is not universally wholesome. One needs to obtain discernment in these things. But discernment can only come by doing it. You will not become a connoisseur if you never drink or only seldom drink. Many of us have developed an unhealthy aversion to such material because we were force-fed in the educational process. Such inner resistance should be overcome now that you are an adult. You are now better equipped to digest good spiritual food. Here are a couple of examples of spiritual food which are pregnant with wisdom and insight. Good digestion is dependent on an adequate chewing of the nutritious food before us. A little of this substance, properly chewed over, has more nutrition for the spirit of an individual than a banquet-sized meal of the junk food which is today's pop culture. The following poem takes the form of the advice of a man to his son. His son had died in the First World War. The advice was written after his death. Most probably, the father would have been too embarrassed to give it to his son whilst he lived. The advice given has eternal significance. The poem is from an earlier age, but is wise and meaningful today. It was written by Rudyard Kipling.
If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating and yet don't look too good nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life for broken, and stoop and build them up with worn-out tools, if you can make one heap of all your winnings, and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss, and lose, and start again at your beginnings, and never breathe a word about your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your term long after they are gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which cries to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distant run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it, and what's more, you'll be a man, my son.
Shakespeare contributed to a greater understanding and application of the law of love in the address of Portia in The Merchant of Venice, which puts the case for mercy.
The quality of mercy is not strained. It droppeth as the gentle rain from heaven upon the place beneath. It is twice blessed. It blesseth him that gives and him that takes. It is mightiest in the mightiest. It becomes the throne of monarch better than his crown. His sceptre shows the force of temporal power, the attribute to awe and majesty, wherein doth sit the dread and fear of kings. But mercy is above the sceptre's sway. It is enthroned in the hearts of kings. It is an attribute to God himself. And earthly power doth then show likest God's, when mercy seasons justice. Therefore, Jew, though justice be thy plea, consider this, that in the course of justice none of us should see salvation. We do pray for mercy, and that same prayer doth teach us all to render the deeds of mercy.
In summary, then, we are saying that you need time to attend to your spiritual resources. Build them up, nurture them, and use them. Before we close this segment, we should reinforce what we discussed regarding your own potential. Do you understand what potential is built into an individual like you? Potential is unrealized promise, and it is largely linked to the power of the mind. Once you appreciate the potential of the mind, the task of using it and gaining access to its power can begin in earnest. We tend to live in the realm of the conscious mind, which is capable of only relatively limited tasks. It can do the simplest mathematics. It supplies much of the information we need at work, in sport, or in our daily tasks. It directs all the bodily functions, which are at the conscious level. However, most of our thinking is done not at the level of the conscious mind, but in the subconscious. The subconscious mind has access to an enormously greater database than does the conscious mind. Perfectly normal individuals with no unusual mental attributes have, on occasions, in their old age or in certain dramatic circumstances, been able to achieve, for instance, a completely full recall of whole days from their childhood. The accuracy of these recollections has been confirmed through independent inquiries. After life-threatening situations, you often hear the expression that my whole life passed before my eyes. The subconscious mind has access to a vast mine of information. It also controls some 2,000 automatic bodily functions, which is vastly more than our conscious mind can cope with at any one time. The subconscious mind also reaches most of our conclusions long before the conscious mind. This can be easily proved. I shall put a proposal to you, and I'd like you to note the speed with which you reach a conclusion. My proposal is that I think you would enhance your personal good looks if you made the change to purple, frizzy hair. There wasn't any need to think about it, was there? You knew immediately that this would be totally inappropriate. But you didn't come to this conclusion by a process of conscious deduction. No, your response was instant. Well then, how do we access the resources of the subconscious? In the simplest possible terms, this is done through the emotions. Once a proposal is put to you, the subconscious mind will communicate feelings to you in the region of the solar plexus. And if it is a completely shocking suggestion, you will feel a physical shock or emotion. Access to the subconscious may be obtained by conscious effort on your part. You need to sensitize yourself to listen to those communicated emotions. Ask yourself, why did I feel that this suggestion was so inappropriate? Why did I know it so quickly? In asking this, you begin to realize some of the potential you have inside your mind. Let's try another proposal. It's a beautiful day, isn't it? Now, you may have responded with the uncertainty arising from a preoccupied conscious mind. If, however, you found that your response was one of instant total agreement, you would have felt a pleasant sensation that says, "You're right, it is a lovely day today." If on the occasion of your hearing of this statement, it is actually a cold, blustery and rather miserable day, then something else will be communicated to you. Perhaps a feeling of irony causing you to groan, "You're kidding, mate." Let's get in touch with those feelings, those instant conclusions supplied by the subconscious with another statement. What do you think of Bo Derek? What do you think of Rambo? Let's try another. A man's greatest asset in life would be to have $1 million. With this statement, there would be a number of conclusions. Firstly, $1 million does sound exciting, and our response to it is positive. But there are other prompts from the subconscious which say, "But my health is more important, and my family are more important." The response is rightly called a response of mixed emotions. I suspect that most intelligent people simply have a more effective internal communication system, so that it is worth your while to get in touch with your subconscious capacities and develop them. So we challenge you to develop yourself. Feed yourself well. Remember the old adage, garbage in, garbage out. You would not allow your builder to build your home out of garbage building materials. Why then should you build your mind and your body on garbage? The performance of the mind is closely linked to the performance of the body. If your diet consists of junk food, how can you expect to have the energy to work on the mind and to give proper expression to the enormous potential you have within you? If your cultural fodder is limited to the level of American soapies, your contribution to your culture and the meaning you find in life will be limited to the shallowness and the trivia expressed in the characters presented in those shows. Music speaks directly to the soul. Music has probably been the most outstanding contribution of Western culture to the rest of the world. Put the great classical works into your data banks. Increase your appreciation of the great classical music of the past. Take in the best theatre, art and cultural activities available, and avoid the mind-numbing garbage that will render you a passive follower rather than a significant contributor to our social, cultural and political heritage. Someone might object that we are advocating rather old hat principles and old hat culture. That is not how we perceive it at all. Rather, we are aware that, to use Cicero's words, man without history is forever a child. Only a sinister revolutionary could wish such immaturity on his people. Remember that we have a heritage. We have a spirit, and the neglect of that spirit and culture will lead to an enormous identity crisis and cultural void, which will be filled by who knows what. No one man's lifetime or experience is adequate to the potential development of his wisdom. All of your heritage, the history of those who went before you, must be drawn upon if you are to realize your greatest potential. The sap of these roots must be drawn upon in order that each individual's unique creative initiative may be properly nurtured and informed. A courageous commitment to personal growth, which encompasses respect for the wisdom and legacy of our cultural heritage, will bring you towards truth in your time, a truth that will lead to freedom.